couple of things about things. One is about how we eat Oreoke and how we do the food. Because in Vipassana, food is a very slow process. Food is a very meditative eating process. In Zen, it's not like that. In Japan, they eat like the wind, and they serve like the wind. They fly around the zendo, pouring things out, and people just like that, so that they can get back to the zendo and sit some more. I think that's the theory. Anyway, that's my idea. But I do think that our attention and that the more you can learn it to be really truly with what you're doing, the more it becomes instinctive. It becomes a part of your body, of your own self. And so making a real study of Oreoke is one of the gifts that come to us with this practice. And so there's not so much wondering which thing to do. There's always that. It took me ages to remember how to do it. And I still mess up. But essentially, to make it an instinctive part of your body as a dance. It's a beautiful thing. And just the right speed so that the food can come down and everybody knows what's happening all the way along. So that that too becomes instinctive. Dennis is doing a good job of keeping us on track. So that's one thing. The other is that this long outside kinhin is not an excuse to take a break. You can take a break for 10 minutes like a regular kinhin, but after that, the intention of that is not to take a nap, not to have a cup of coffee, not to take a hike. It's to walk slowly around and truly engage with the world. This is nature. We hardly ever have an experience of nature anymore in our lives. And nature is the most healing of all things there is. We know that, don't we? That's why it's on the schedule, to engage with nature, to slowly meet the trees and the grass, the currant is just about to bloom. And the madrone is in full bloom. This is a wonderful time to see what's out there. And down by the creek, by the gate, by the creek, there are probably milkmaids, little white flowers that always come up at this time of year. But it's not a flower hype so much as just being with. Be with the wind. Be with the rain. If you like, you can walk around the outside of the zendo and make that your walk. But make it a part of your life while you're here. Does that make sense? Is that possible? So we're here because we're celebrating Buddha's Parinirvana. and it's such a clear thing that he left us with. There was no fancy words, no fancy it just was the way it was, and his last message was just take care of yourself. And so we say that to each other all the time, take care of yourself. What did he mean? Practice is essential for an enlightened life. Enlightenment is not some fancy explosion somewhere. It's not something that's going to make you another person. There is no other person but you, and you are precious. Please don't forget. Enlightenment is about what Dogen called dropping off body and mind, which means forget yourself. Just forget yourself. And boy, is that hard. It's really, really hard, because we make ourselves the central actor in the whole drama. And it's a fabulous drama. And we're really good at polishing it up every day. Oh. And making our life very interesting and exciting. But an interesting and exciting life leaves us alone, floundering, and working in a kind of dark. Unless we allow ourselves to develop practices in our life that are in line with the precepts, that we not only know what to do, but that we actually do it. That also is really, really hard. We've been practicing with Chogyam Trungpa's Lojong these many months, and that whole compendium of practices is just reminding us to forget ourselves and to pay attention when we do. Don't forget ourselves. Because the basis of our practice is compassion. So as long as we're top dog, as long as we're the big me, there's no room for real compassion. So in Chogyam's world, you put yourself second. You always put yourself second. That's really hard. But that is the practice. We call it a bodhisattva practice. Bodhisattva means enlightening being. Willing not to be enlightened and to spend life being with people, being number two and helping people. Being like Avalokiteshvara, available at any moment to rise up and pick up a child. Help somebody start a car. Any part of our life is part of the precepts. And at the base of them is to care. And the caring comes from where? Maybe I'll leave that. That's really the crucial point. So often I think of us all as Buddha's children, and that in a way we're held by what we call Buddha, by the great huge forces of life that are all connected to each other, including you and me. And sometimes we're Buddha. Sometimes without knowing we're Buddha. If you think you're Buddha, it's a mistake. It doesn't help at all. Except when you're sitting, you can remember that this is Buddha's practice, this is Buddha's work, and this itself is enlightenment. Zazen itself is enlightenment. So Buddha said to his students, be your own teacher. Or he said, be your own guide in the island of the river. I like that. Great river of life that's flowing through us all the time. But be a life that's of worth. A life that's really connected to the universe, really connected to everything. Not all split off and separated. That's the point of our practice. Other questions?
Angie, when we walk outside, do we walk about the speed that we're in the Zendo, that same very slow? Is that your recommendation?
No, I would say a little faster. Walking with Thich Nhat Hanh, it's always according to your breath, but not the slow breath, but a natural breath. So that as you naturally walk, you begin to notice your breathing and I think it's 3 breaths to a step, but you can make it up to whatever is comfortable. And if you get tired, sit down. I mean, don't make it a tough kind of challenge. Just allow it to be what it is.
Hands also like that?
No. Just ordinary.
We were doing some indoor exercises. Yes. Shall we let that go? It sounds like it would be more fruitful if we were outside. We were doing that in case.
Rob told me about that. I think it's nice to give people a choice. Dennis?
Angie, being in this room again, in this beautiful place with these people, is so special. And I come from a a desert place. And since I got here Thursday, we've had as much rain as we get at home in a year. And the yesterday I did an outdoor king hen with three fat little does that didn't seem the least interested in my fascinating story. But the power and the majesty of what's been going on around us this whole time,
yes,
is, well, it's mind-blowing,
yes,
is what it is.
Yes.
And I would like to tell you how grateful I am for your comments yesterday about the potential insidiousness of the overwhelming growth of our obsession with electronic devices and information.
Yes.
It's a real source of distress, I guess, for me, and I'm not sure how to think about it. And it seems to be gathering momentum and becoming overwhelming, and I felt like I was being nourished by what you said, so I want to thank you for that. And finally, the more I sit, you are beautifully framed by some yellow flowers in the tree.
The laurels.
Is that laurel?
Yeah.
Oh, you look great.
Thank you, Dennis.
Dennis, you're flirting again.
She brings it up.
Oh, Ben.
You had finished talking about developing the interconnectedness with everything. And I kind of, in this sit, I've been noticed that it came up with a loosening effect. Like it was stronger, you know, a couple of years ago. And I have a lot of regrets. And I kind of, I don't know, I guess regret was a word that came up, and we don't, it feels like it doesn't come up much in Buddhism, we don't talk about regret. So I'm wondering if that plays into it, or how, if you can help me kind of approach that or understand that better. Is it just it comes and goes, and that's just the nature of it?
It's the nature of it, for sure. And that's not the point exactly. The real point is just to encounter what you encounter with a whole heart. That itself is the interconnectedness. Especially if you're not able to sit a whole session, you're in the middle. You finish 2 days, and you have to go home. And it's a regrettable time to have to go. You can sit a little bit more at home. I know that's not easy, the baby. But and not be discouraged. And certainly no regrets. The truth of it is in you. It's nowhere else. Just be with it. Whatever you have to do.
And I guess part is just realizing there's nothing I can do about the past. I can only start with right now and start doing that again.
That's the problem. Doggone it. Good luck. I did my best to that little baby.
When we came down here at 5:30 this morning, I was sitting very just a few minutes here in my corner with a nice wall here, feeling really safe. There was this huge explosion, and it was just Mother Nature outside, but it absolutely terrified me. It sounded like a dump truck and bomb. And of course, my mind immediately went to things like Gaza and, you know, all these. And then I, you know, was just still sitting there. Of course, this was going on all morning. The Sangha held me. I mean, I was, you know, you talk about twitching. I was grinding my teeth. I felt almost like I was on an electric chair because I just, the wit, I'm not a person who easily, like, can be in the, you know, the wind just kind of, I kind of am not grounded. And at home, were I alone, I probably would have thrown, like lightning, mattresses against my windows. I mean, it is like absolute terror for me. So I was experiencing this, and of course I had to just still sit with it, which was great and horrible. And I thought, well, I'm not going to have a heart attack. It was like a panic, phobic, compulsive attack. And it was great because the Sangha was holding me. And I watched my mind just going over these stories about bombs or, you know, generations of people in the world whose family, which is all true. Mm-hmm. It's all true, you know, all these wars that we have in Ireland and so on. I mean, it's just ongoing, and the scars are very deep. That is also true. But what I got from it, because I couldn't move, I tried my pole. I thought, okay, this is just my mind. I said, I'm going to take my watch off, and I'm going to see what my pulse is like. But, and all the time I was, as mine was going, I was still just breathing slowly in and out, because it is very nourishing, and I know how to do that. So the mind's going like a schizophrenic like that, and I'm breathing. But I'm thinking my blood pressure must be 200, you know. And I mean, I don't know how to do blood pressure when I'm just sitting in a chair, but I think I worked through some of that compulsive body, like, I was thinking, is there a body component to this anyway, besides just the brain? I don't know. I would have been really interested if I had my blood pressure check. But I feel like I made a little through passage somehow, that it'll happen again, of course, and I want to throw the pillows up against the wall and hide my head, but I've had this experience now where I just had to be with it.
That's really important. That's really, really important. That will serve you for the rest of your life.
I think so. Sort of like a phobic, compulsive mind thing. But it mm-hmm. was absolutely also very much in my body. It's like I had told myself for years, if I wake up and it's gray out and I can't see across the street, and it just kind of, I think my body first goes into like a lockdown. And I think, oh, and then I have to remember, oh, you know, but I'm in a house and it's warm and the sun will come again, don't worry. But I almost feel that, so this is a clue for me, because I almost feel as if I'm in my own DNA, my genetics. It's almost like a biological thing, I thought. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much that could be, that when you look out and you can't see across the street, and it's foggy that way and damp and cold. And I say, well, that's what it is. But my first reaction has been, so I'm wondering if this might transfer from...
We'll find out.
Yeah.
We will find out. You'll have to report back.
But I thank the Sangha for holding the space, because that rattling was just, it's like chalk on a board for me, just constant.
Did a tree fall back out there? Was it a fallen tree?
No, it was just that incredible...
Just the roar of the rain.
Roar, yeah.
It just was roaring.
Metal, is there metal up here?
Yes.
Like, I imagine bits of metal, you know, just...
It's in my memory, long, long, long memory of that flapping up there.
But a question, do you think of a comment, or is it just a silly question, that there is some kind of biological part that almost is like, I thought about fight or flight, you know, kind of thing. It's almost like a bodily reaction, almost before the mind starts the story.
Sure.
So there's, one wonders if one can really, after much meditation, get that more under control. Or do you need big pharma, you know? I mean, I don't know. I'm serious.
Don't go to big pharma.
It's a lot. It's an amazing amount of work to try to, you know,
yes,
select those wild stallions going off from the,
yes,
from the stray cats, bring
and
them in.
That's our practice.
Oh,
that's why we sit.
I got it.
Great example, Abby. Yeah. Thank you very much. Oh, that was hard. Yeah. They say Bodhisattva's life is hard. Bodhisattvas don't run away. They try to help if they can. They try to stay safe, of course. And they do get scared. I love Jack Kornfield's story of being with some great master in Burma, and they were coming down a very steep, long, long road to the town in a taxi. And it was very windy road, and the guy was going crazy half all the way down, and he was trying to be really, really still and conquer the fear and gritting his teeth. And they got all the way down, and his master turned to him and said, "That was scary, wasn't it?" This is the second day, and those of us who are staying will be here for more days and more changes as our bodies and minds shift and change with the wind and the river and the rain. And I think the rain is supposed to stop. So they'll have another experience. So just enjoy as much as you can. It's hard. The second, third day, they're hard. And be kind to yourself. Give yourself a lot of encouragement. Because it ain't easy.